The Saturday members of the WCF Symphony return to the historical Brown Derby in Waterloo to present their Baroque holiday concerts featuring the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum, and joining us today on the Iowa Art Showcase is the WCF Symphony's music director and conductor, Jason Weinberger. And thank you so much for joining us today, Jason.
Well, it's really great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
So you are tapping into a treasure trove of holiday music composed by Bach that normally you have to go to another kind of concert to hear these little gems that are stuck in all these different pieces.
With this show in particular, as you mentioned, it's kind of critical to take a step back and we look at the life and work of Johann Sebastian Bach. One of the things that we discover is that, you know, he was very much a working musician. He just wrote a ton of music. I mean, new pieces every week and writing a church cantata plus other music constantly. And it kind of marvels people who study his music as to how he even did this. I mean, where were the hours in the day between the teaching and being a father to all these kids and other responsibilities that he had, and then, of course, writing this incredible music. And so it gives us an appreciation on one hand for just the tremendous productivity of Bach, and also, in particular, with this period of time in Leipzig, which was kind of the pinnacle of his working career. In the first couple of years that he was there as one of the key musical figures in town, he set about with what seems like a very dedicated plan to create numerous full cycles of church cantatas. So we're not talking about just, you know, I'm going to write a piece for Easter and now I'm going to write a piece for Christmas. I mean, he was trying to go through the annual liturgical calendar and literally create a huge body of work year after year after year, several sequences of the full liturgical cycle in music. And he was doing all kinds of things. He was writing new pieces. He was taking old pieces and rewriting them. And he was flipping, you know, stuff that he had heard and he had written in all kinds of directions. Just an incredible thing to study in its totality. So this concert also touches on what Bach was doing in Leipzig, not just what happened at Christmas, but this giant project he seems to have had to write these complete cycles. And then we zoom in on Christmas, which was this incredible time in this particular community, because not only does that time of year form a real pinnacle in the liturgical calendar, but of course the nature of the liturgy itself and the holidays that are being celebrated at that time of year lends itself to a particular kind of music that was incredibly expressive and very ornamental, you know. So there's this special quality to the music itself. And then finally, in Leipzig, which was one of the leading trade centers in Europe, there was a trade fair that went on during the Christmas and New Year's time. So we know from documentation that whenever there was a trade fair, whatever time of year it happened, there was all kinds of special music going on. And Bach always worked harder and wrote more music for the trade fair times. Then you double that because it's Christmas and New Year's and the Advent period. And the music he's writing anyway, which is glorious, is yet again a step above because of the exposure that he's getting and Leipzig in general is getting through these trade fairs. So I think the whole concert is going to be a journey for our audience through this incredible story of Bach's work and then what happened when he got to Leipzig and then this unique historical kind of confluence of the music that Bach was leading in the city and this incredible trade presence that brought people, merchants from all over the place is really an incredible scene, and that's what led us to the music on this program.
Plus, he had access to these amazing performers, which added to the ability to write this kind of music, which I think is incredible.
Well, that's one of the things we'll talk about on the concert as well. And it's interesting because he had access to quite a few musicians, but we see sometimes Bach didn't always have the musicians he wanted. And sometimes those players were off playing in a different church. And, you know, over time, he sort of managed to consolidate his hold on the musical life and have a command of that. But there were many times when he complained about the quality of music. And it makes you wonder how some of these musicians even manage this incredibly difficult music. That's what I want the audience to appreciate in hearing this stuff is it's so virtuosic. And sometimes Bach may not have had the virtuosity that he needed.
Tell us about the opening work, this Harpsichord Concerto No. 4 in A, Schmieder 1055. And I believe you are going to have a very important role in this.
Yes, I will. I'm going to be playing the solo part at the harpsichord. And this is a wonderful concerto by Bach. And people are wondering, so why on earth are we doing a concerto when I thought we were in the Christmas season? And, you know, I thought we were going to be hearing cantatas and liturgical music. Well, we start with this piece because it's a wonderful overture to the concert, I think. Just the spirit of the work and this wonderful buoyant quality, dance-like quality of the piece makes it great as an opener. But also it lets us start off right off the bat with introducing this idea that the musical life of Leipzig just exploded during this period of time that we're passing through right now, this Christmas time leading into the New Year's period. And in particular, with the trade fair going on, we know that the Collegium Musicum, which was the secular music group that Bach directed, was active during this time, which is unusual because that group generally performed in the warmer months. But it was active during the December into early January period. And we don't have programs of that group, but we know that they played Bach's overtures and we know that they played all of his keyboard concertos. And he rearranged pieces, we think, for these concerts into all kinds of combinations. And there's probably a ton of music that was played that we don't even know about anymore. It's probably all gone. But it's really fascinating to imagine this other setting during this period of time, which was not in the church, but in a secular setting, with music that was generally instrumental and was just could be incredibly vibrant. And so this piece, even though we don't really know exactly what it was written for, and we don't even know when and how many times Bach himself performed it, but we do have a sense from the music of this incredible, joyous intricacy, and it feels like it easily could have been performed on a concert of the Collegium Musicum during this time.
And Bach himself was an incredible keyboard player, and then also he dives in and has all this chromanticism and all sorts of cool things happening in this work.
Yeah, I think this is really one of his best concertos of any type and maybe stands alongside the D minor. It's really fascinating to me, you know, because Bach was a keyboard player. And so I guess when you play his music or when you play the music of Mozart, I mean, these were the best keyboard players of their lifetimes, of their generations. And maybe even within a 100-year span, and then us mere mortals sit down and sort of inhabit them for a little bit. I do find this piece in particular harmonically is very interesting, particularly the second movement, which has this really wonderful ground bass that moves throughout. But even in the first movement, there are some really interesting moments, and structurally, the way the piece is put together is kind of unusual, and the way the harpsichord interplays with the ensemble is very interesting, much less solo and much more chamber music-like writing throughout this piece. So it's been so great to learn it, and I'm very excited that we get to present it as the opener of this concert.
And tell us about the sinfonia that follows.
Well, so we've got a couple instrumental pieces on this program, harpsichord concerto being the first, also several sinfonias or concertos from cantatas. And people say, well, what is that? Well, if it's got a title of sinfonia or sonata or concerto, that denoted the fact that it was an instrumental work. And very frequently in Bach's cantatas and also in some of his larger scale works like the Christmas Oratorio, we see these instrumental movements which provide either a break in the ongoing story or action, or very often serve as the opening movement, kind of the attention getter before we get our lesson through the musical text that Bach sets in the cantata. So this is a neat one. This is, again, more of a chamber music piece that only has the low string voices paired with woodwinds and continuo, and it's really quite beautiful. It's got a slow opening, and then it has a contrapuntal development in a faster tempo. So in a lot of ways, it is like an overture because that was the format of an overture during this Baroque period. The only thing it doesn't do that our later overture on this program will do is it doesn't come back to the slow music at the end. It just kind of brings itself to a conclusion. But really interesting sonorities in this piece featuring the low strings with oboe and this wonderful intricate writing. Again, it's very chamber music-like, and that's what's so special about playing it in this venue.
Tell us about some of the soloists that are going to be joining you on this concert.
Well, we've got some great symphony musicians who are going to be playing big solos throughout the evening, and then we also have two guest artists joining us, and they are vocalists, both of them teaching here in Iowa. We're thrilled to have them joining us. Brian Falzgraf, who teaches up at Wartburg, he is just so steeped in the German tradition and in Bach's music, and he's spent plenty of time in Leipzig. So it's going to be great to hear from him and hear him sing this music and bring it to life with that wonderful background. He's a tenor, so we're going to be featuring an aria for tenor, as well as two duets, which he'll sing with Jennifer Larson. And she is a soprano who, again, I think has just the right type of voice for this music and this space, you know, where I wouldn't call her like a really overly dramatic kind of singer, kind of voice. And that makes it really perfect for these lovely arias and duets. And she's going to sing one of the all-time famous Bach arias, which was written for Christmas, and that features a flute solo as well that will be played by Claudia Anderson. And then in a couple of the other pieces, we'll have our two principal violinists featured, Anita Tucker and Robert Espy, and we'll also have our principal cellist, Isaac Pastor Chermak. He'll be featured in a piece which is quite unique. It's a duet with only cello accompaniment, as well as continuo. So it's very unusual to see that combination and really, again, just striking the way Bach creates this beautiful tapestry of sound with such a small number of resources. All of these pieces really feature these wonderful interplays between these great solo parts. I realize, really, there's no piece on this whole concert that feels truly like just a solo work for one musician and ensemble. Everything is intertwined, and it feels like there's multiple soloists or chamber music mixing with the concerto form. So maybe I overstated in calling everyone a soloist, but we have an interesting relationship with one another in this concert.
So this next work you're going to be doing, the duet, features both Jennifer and Brian. And tell us about this cantata from Schmieder 110.
Yeah, this is one of the works that Bach wrote for Christmas Day. And there's a sequence of those, of course, because he did this over the course of several years. And he also wrote cantatas for these occasions in other cities as well. These are not the only ones he wrote, but they're unique in that they're part of this larger cycle that he was constructing. This duet is unique in that the only instrumental accompaniment is the continuo. And the voices really intertwine together, forming, you know, sort of the complete melodic element, and then you've got the continuo just kind of rollicking along underneath. It's such a delightful aria, or duet, I should say, and it's pretty standard in terms of form. It's not a grand, large piece in multiple sections, just more of a typical A-B-A type form, and does not have a long solo section, which is a little bit different from some of the other vocal pieces on this program that have extensive instrumental sections. This only has a short one at the beginning before the singers come in. So it's really, I think, in a way, maybe one of the most intimate pieces on the program, and just has a very sweet and pastoral character to it.
And this is the one where Isaac Pastor Chermak also solos with them.
Yeah, it's really like a trio with two voices and cello. It's just wonderful. And it's as if that cello part is like a third singer or something. It's a delightful piece.
And you're going to do then another aria. This is the second movement from the cantata Schmieder 171. And this one features Brian singing the solo part with two different soloists.
Yes, this is a wonderful aria from a very elaborate, beautiful cantata, which was written for New Year's Day. That was one of the things we wanted to do at this concert, was not to restrict ourselves only to the music Bach wrote for Christmas, because what was going on here was an incredibly vibrant period where over the course of several weeks, Bach gave many performances and also wrote a bunch of music or repurposed music for lots of different occasions. So we wanted to give the audience a sense of the richness and the variety of not just the music, but also the occasions, you know, that kind of gather during this time of year. So this was a New Year's cantata, and it's really a very exciting piece. It has this wonderful opening chorus that features trumpets and timpani, and it's one of those big cantatas. But this aria is a little different. It's for tenor with two solo violins and continuo. So it kind of flips the script on like the duet that came before it, and now you have an instrumental duet with a solo vocal part. And it's really just a tour de force kind of aria for tenor. It's about 5 minutes long, but it's just so virtuosic all around, and it's so inventive, particularly the way the instrumental parts fit in with the tenor part. It's just a great example of how Bach could rise to the occasion for these special moments and write just mind-blowing music.
And tell us about this next cantata movement you're going to be playing. And apparently now this is by an unknown composer.
Yeah, BWV 142 is the cantata we're talking about. And it's an interesting case. In this particular case, we don't have any material that dates to Bach's lifetime. There's a copy of this piece from, I think, the 1750s. And the copyist at that time attributed to Bach. He wrote Bach's name in it, but it turns out it's unlikely to have been written by Bach, and that was not really discovered until, or not really posited until the early 20th century. The problem is figuring out who did write it. We know around when it comes from, and we know it's from Leipzig, but we don't know if it was Bach's predecessor, which is a guy named Kuhnau, a composer who wrote a lot of great music, and Bach actually used his music not infrequently. So when Bach needed a piece to fill in for a big performance or something, he would often borrow a cantata by Kuhnau and present that if he couldn't write one. So choosing this piece actually allows us to talk with the audience about this interesting relationship Bach had with his predecessor. But it was assumed, I think, throughout the middle part of the 20th century that Kuhnau wrote this piece, but then more evidence arose that perhaps it wasn't. And it could have been one of a number of other composers active in the area in the 17-teens, or it may have even been a student of Kuhnau's. We don't really know. But I thought it would be interesting to present the piece, A, because it, for many centuries, or you know, at least a couple hundred years, was considered to be by Bach. And it also just opens a window into how difficult it can be for us sometimes to actually pin down, you know, everything that happened in the musical activity of this time. People assume, oh, history, we've got it all documented. There's so much that went on that we don't know about during this time. We only have the skeleton of what actually happened. And so what we're doing is looking at a skeleton like you would at a dinosaur skeleton and trying to imagine what it looked like in its full glory, I guess, during its life. So that's what we're doing with these works. And this is a great way for the audience to look at that question. The piece itself is pretty short, but it's kind of a neat little exercise in kind of echo music in a way. Lots of exchange between the string section and the oboe section back and forth. It's really actually a pretty fun piece to play, but it's not by Bach.
And then Jennifer Larson returns to the stage along with Claudia Anderson. Tell us about this aria from Cantata 151.
Yeah, this piece is called Süßer Trost, which is also the name of the cantata because this movement is the first movement of the cantata. And so this was a piece that was written also to be performed as part of the Christmas festival. And it was actually targeted for the third day of Christmas. And all of these are, of course, tied to specific texts that are being used by Bach for their relevance to the liturgical calendar. It's a solo cantata, which means it's only features soprano with a small ensemble. But this movement is incredibly striking. You picture, you know, this occasion where this cantata is being presented on one of the feast days there after Christmas on the third day. And, you know, part of whatever service was happening then, it comes time for this musical recitation, this musical moment. And this kind of hush falls over, one would hope. If not, they wouldn't have heard anything because it starts so softly, beautifully lilting in the strings with this absolutely magical flute part. And it's like this incredible figuration. It almost sounds like the world's most musical bird just improvising, you know, sitting high above the trees. It has incredible majesty to it. And you picture this, it probably was a pretty noisy church environment, and there were certainly a lot more people in church during Christmas time maybe than other times of year. And he begins this solo cantata with this you know, breath of air from outside and from the forest, and then of course, the soprano joins after this long flute solo, and their musical lines are intertwined. Then there's a fast section in the middle of the piece before the original slow music returns. So it's an ABA type format, but it's a huge aria. It's 10 minutes long, one of Bach's biggest, and presents all kinds of challenges for the musicians. So this really is kind of the pinnacle of all of our vocal music on this program. And it was something that when I proposed it to Jennifer, I could tell she thought about it for a minute and then said, you know, who doesn't like a challenge? And so I can't give her enough credit for taking that on, and I'll be willing to go in on this with us. It's difficult, but glorious piece of music. And it's all the more striking because he just totally did away with the opening choral movement that, you know, is there in almost every cantata and really sets the mood. And instead, he starts with these two wonderful sounds, the soprano and the flute. And it's just, it's a remarkable piece of music.
And then you have Jennifer and Brian come back. So tell us about the cantata duet from Schmieder 191.
Well, this cantata was written for Christmas, BWV 191, but its entirety, an opening choral movement, then this duet, and then a closing choral movement, it's replicated essentially in the B minor Mass. And so people who know the B minor Mass may not be aware that many movements of that piece were taken from other pieces, and he cobbled it together, writing some new music and repurposing old music. And he literally took this chunk of music, this 15 minutes of this cantata, and dropped it right in the middle of the B minor Mass. But this is its original incarnation as this cantata. And it is an incredible piece. I mean, the choral writing in this particular work, which we're not doing the choral sections, but it's peerless. I mean, it's some of the greatest choral writing I think that's ever, you know, been done. But then this duet in the middle is like, again, this incredible contrast and breath of fresh air. It features the ensemble playing pizzicato almost entirely throughout. The continuo plays pizzicato with these little dottings of sound from the violins. And the flute, again, has this amazing obbligato part. Then the duet of the tenor and the soprano in the middle of the piece. It's just so striking. And so remarkable. It's very peaceful and you know, kind of in the spirit of this season, but such a contrast to the glory of the music that precedes it, with brass and timpani and incredible choral contrapuntal writing. And then he gives us this. So it's nice to talk a little bit about where the piece comes from, because it comes from such a striking moment in its own cantata. And then, of course, it's reused in one of these incredibly effective moments in the B minor Mass, which is one of the great musical works of all time. So it's really delightful to get a chance to do this, and also, of course, to reconnect it with Christmas. I mean, B minor Mass is a piece that does get performed throughout the year now, but this work really originally belongs to the Christmas season.
Tell us about the suite or the overture number 4 in D that you're going to be polishing off the concert with.
Well, this is one of my favorite works by Bach. It's so interesting. Just like the other three overtures, it's in the French style, at least in terms of its format. And of course, movements bourrée and gavotte, minuet. These are, you know, French dance forms that made their way all over Europe, and composers everywhere drew on them throughout the 18th century. But this piece is really special. It exists seemingly in multiple versions. For many years, it was thought to have been written for strings with oboes and bassoon and trumpets and timpani. But more recent scholarship suggests that actually it was originally composed just for strings with the oboes and bassoon normally. And then later, when it was used, the first movement of this piece, which is a huge movement, was reused almost in its entirety as a choral movement for a work that Bach wrote for the Christmas season. He added trumpets and timpani. And then we think later on in the construction of the Bach, you know, the whole Bach works, it was just assumed that the instrumentation that we see in that cantata is what Bach had originally composed it for. But it appears that the original version of this piece, this fourth suite, was for strings with oboes and bassoon. So that's the version we're going to play. And so there's that connection to the Christmas period, because, of course, we know that he used this entire giant first movement again at Christmas time in a choral work. So there's this very strong connection musically. But also, this is exactly the kind of piece we can assume that the Collegium Musicum might have played during that time, if they were to put on a concert during this period of trade fairs and all this activity in Leipzig. And actually, I wonder, well, if he used the piece in a Christmas work and repurposed it as a choral movement, maybe they also played the instrumental version the same season. It'd be so interesting to know if that actually happened. Of course, we probably will never know if that kind of thing happened. you know, unless a treasure trove of document turns up somewhere in Leipzig or somewhere else in Germany. But it's just really fascinating to think about the possibility of that. These four works, they like the Brandenburg Concertos, they share their germination in a different period of time, and we don't really know a lot about where each piece comes from. But with this one, we have this strong context, which is this connection to the Leipzig Christmas season. So that's why we've chosen it for this concert. It's also delightful the way Bach uses the dance form. So he's got this wonderful French-style overture, big slow opening, and then a whole big allegro using the figure three all over the place. And then we have the dance movements, these great bourrées together and a gavotte, a pair of minuets, and then réjouissance, which is a piece that Handel uses to great effect in his water music and other works, and is something you see in French music of the 18th century, late 17th, early 18th century. And this one's a fast movement, not Bach's only réjouissance, but a fast one that really is a delightful way to end the concert. I'm hoping people will be tapping their feet because it really is dance music after all. We don't expect that people dance to this particular piece. This was concert music for the most part, or as we've seen now, Bach would also use it again in his cantatas. But it really stems from the music of the dance, and Bach was particularly attuned to dance rhythms, and his music always feels so alive because of that. And this is a piece where you really sense that. The rhythm in this piece is so infectious, and it just it's really at the root of what we're doing with the work as we put it together.
So, Jason, how can folks get more details and tickets to the WCF Symphony's A Broke Holiday Concert at the Brown Derby Ballroom this Saturday in Waterloo?
Well, WCFsymphony.org is your place for all things symphony, and tickets there as well. This concert is looking like it's going to sell out at 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Those are new times for us, and we think we'll probably be at capacity for both shows. We hope to have walk-up tickets, but you might want to check our Facebook page because that's where we'll put updates if we do sell out. So keep an ear to the ground so that you can keep an ear to this marvelous Christmas music once the 8th rolls around.
And the Brown Derby, such a perfect place to play this music, too. Well, thanks for today goes to Iowa Public Radio's Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn, and a big thanks to the WCF Symphony's music director and conductor, Jason Weinberger, for joining us today. And thanks so much, Jason.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Jacqueline.